Cool. I wanted to start with a funny note, I guess. We had a lot of fun making this video over in Holland. I played it in the US a couple of weeks ago when we had System Center Universe there. And I'm very excited that I can be here in Singapore today to talk to you guys about what's new in Microsoft Azure Infrastructure as a Service. And I deliberately say not everything that's new in Infrastructure as a Service, because there's a ton that has been released in Azure. I'm going to focus on a couple of things that might interest you, and we'll talk about the infrastructure side, not the platform side with the websites, but just the infrastructure side. For those that don't know me, I'm Maarten Goet. I flew in from the Netherlands. I work at OpsLogix, where I manage the company, and we build management packs for Microsoft System Center. If you want to follow me or have any questions, you can certainly also reach me through Twitter. My Twitter handle here is on the screen. So again, thank you for joining me. Today we'll talk about infrastructure in Azure and cloud as a fact of life. A lot of organizations are moving to cloud-based services, whether you know it as an IT department or maybe it's even unknown that certain business departments are using it. Services like mail services run in Office 365. A lot of organizations are moving and actually considering moving some of their dev or maybe test servers over to Azure. So cloud is a fact of life. And the question really is, what makes Microsoft Azure from its competitors? So Google with their apps platform, Amazon with their AWS platform. Well, Microsoft has this vision where they use the knowledge they have in the enterprise world for years that they have already on Windows Server, Hyper-V, System Center, running themselves at their IT shop, but also with their cloud services to make use of that enterprise knowledge and make their cloud services enterprise ready, if you will, enterprise grade. This hyperscale is also a differentiator. If you heard this morning in the keynote, Microsoft runs a lot of servers, tens or even hundreds of thousands of servers at scales, learns from those practices in how to maintain them, how to patch them, how to upgrade them, how to keep them alive. And will use that technology and use that knowledge into their cloud services for you as a consumer. And the third, of course, is their hybrid. So it's not about their cloud service only. You have the option to use Hyper-V on-premise. You can use Hyper-V, for instance, from a service provider. Or you could use Azure, which at the backend still runs Hyper-V and is the same technology, but then from a public cloud standpoint, where you can take benefits as pay-per-use, don't have a lot of investments up front, but use what we have. So Microsoft differentiates in the fact that they are hyperscale, a lot of learnings there, enterprise grade. You see that today in security and regulations they offer, but certainly also in the hybrid world where they have the three pillars with on-prem private, service provider, and a public offering. Now, Microsoft has a lot of regions. If you compare it to Amazon or Google, Microsoft has the most data centers in the world that you can make use of and where you can store your data and make sure that they don't move out of your regions. Currently, we are at 19 regions. Two new have been opened in Australia late last year, and two new regions have been opened specifically for government in the US. And data centers in India, close to this region, are opening somewhere early this year. So those are coming. And other regions will be opened very soon. Germany is next. There's a lot of regions coming, which will have for you a choice to store your data in your region, in your country, if you will. Now, who's been using Azure? Who already has tried Azure in the past couple of weeks, a month? Okay, fair share of hands, maybe half of the audience. Those have tried probably know about the management portal. It was launched with a management portal where you today still can manage VMs, you can manage your Azure Active Directory, etc. But Microsoft has also a new portal, which is in preview. So it's not generally available yet, but it's in preview mode, and it supports all the things you would probably miss out in the old portal and really need for your enterprise. Things like role-based security, things like resource groups, where you bundle websites, databases, other items as a group of services that work together. There's a lot of things that are new in the portal, and going forward, the new portal will be the place where Microsoft will add all the functionality managing your Azure environment and also other environments it can connect to, like ADFS and such. It is also very different in a way that it's targeted at a DevOps scenario, where the developers and your operations people will work together to deliver a service. So from developing in TFS or externally developing, connecting it into Azure, and then having a way to look at the status, to maintain the operations, and also give error codes and other feedback back to the development team. So it's very much DevOps, and you see that in working in the screens. And with that, we also allow for application lifecycle management with staging applications, moving them into production, all from this new portal. So that's the first thing I want to demo. Let me switch over to my desktop. Here we go. I'll open up a browser. And the new URL is called portal.azure.com. You get prompted for your credentials if you're using an organizational account or a Microsoft account. And you get logged into this start board, if you will, this start screen. And it is much like you have in a Windows 8 or a Windows 10 fashion, where there's tiles and other things you can use. Now on top, if I click my name, you'll actually see there's a couple of Azure AD directories that are connected to my account, which hold resources, which hold identities and such to use in the new portal. And of course, here you'll find things like settings and customize. If I go to settings, we can choose a theme. For instance, maybe I don't want to work from a blue team, I want to work from a black team. And those are the things we can do. And then of course, if I go down here and I click customize, we also have the option to move things around. For instance, to resize tiles, maybe to pin certain tiles, so to really customize it for my organization, for my user ID, to do management of my environment. So I'll leave it for now, I won't customize. On the left, you have a couple of things in a charms bar, the home button, the notifications you get from deploying, removing, or other statuses, browsing, and certain active tiles that you're working with today. If I hit browse, you see certain categories. I can look at my application insights, my resource groups, all sorts of stuff I have. But I can also look at everything. And if I look at everything, and for instance, I go to virtual machines, it gives me a list of all the virtual machines running in this particular subscription. Now, there's two running, one called VM Basic A1 and VM Standard D1. And as you can see, the running, I deployed them in West Europe, which is Amsterdam, the Netherlands, so that's where I'm from. And we can click further, so if we go to Basic A1, and we click the name, we get a blade, that's what it's called, a window, if you will, on the right for this VM, and if I maximize it, we get a couple of information on the website. Now, my apologies for the screen resolution, because there's a lot of real estate here and you probably want to have a better screen resolution than I have on this projector. But I can have a look at some basic information for monitoring. I can have a look at the current spending, but of course I can also have a look at things like all settings and things like the IP address, for instance. And here's where you see that new options come available in this portal and not in the old portal. Because setting, for instance, a static IP address was something you used to do through PowerShell because it wasn't available in the old management portal. Now, these are things you can just change through this web browser in the new portal. So there's a lot of stuff here, and we can look at other things like, the extensions, the availability set, the disks, the endpoint, etc. I'll leave it for now. Just to give you an idea that the VM is running, I'll remote into the basic A1. And give you an understanding that this is just a Windows server running in my resource group. So the new Azure portal, certainly if you want to try out Azure, this is the way to go forward. And if you saw the announcement last 2 or 3 days on the blog, they're continuously adding features to the portal, so don't scare yourself if you log in one day and find new items to work with. So this is one of the VMs that's running, and we'll come back to this VM in a couple of minutes to look further. Now, looking at the naming standards I chose for my VMs, you saw VM Standard A1, VM Standard D1. We have Basic, we have DA. What does it all mean? Well, those are series of compute tiers. So those are the specifications my VMs run by. It means how much memory does it get? How much CPU time does it get? Does it share its core with other VMs, or is it dedicated to this VM? How much IOPS do I get on my disks? Those are, of course, important things when sizing your VMs. If you have a workload and you're migrating to Azure, you want to consider a certain tier. Now, the pricing goes up, of course, if you choose to go with a higher tier. If you want to have more IOPS, more memory, then you'll pay more. So you really need to make sure that you choose the right ones. Now, there's a couple of new ones in the A series, which is the first series with standard disks, so spindles, if you will. Those are the A8 and the A9. And specifically, you see in the third column, the memory is very rich. You can use a 56 gig or even 112 gig memory. Those are for high performance workloads, if you will. And they also have access to a second InfiniBand network. That means that the communication between VMs can be at high speed, 40 gigabit per second is what you can maximum achieve through these VMs. So A8 talking to another A8 will achieve that high performance through that specific network. Now, there's a new series that's been announced called the D series. And the main difference with the other series is this one uses SSD disks, so solid state, flash, if you will. No spindles, but flash. So this is faster. And you see it particularly in the number of IOPS I can achieve with the D series. Now, these start with the 1 and going up all the way to 14. Again, it's the difference between having a certain number of cores, having a certain number of memory available. There's also a faster CPU in the host behind the scenes. So if you need more processing power, the D-series is also something to consider for its CPU. And there's a better core-to-RAM ratio of 1 to 3.5. So this really helps if you have workloads that allow for caching, because this temporary drive that holds flash can use for caching purposes. So SQL 2014, some of these newer applications that allow for quick caching can certainly best be run on D-series. But again, it's going to be slightly more expensive because of the flash, and we'll look at that in the new portal. Now, the other new series that's been announced is the G series. There's a legacy that chose the G because apparently Scott Guthrie had said this is the Godzilla series. I don't know if that's truth, but the G series is extremely large. So if you look at, for instance, memory, we can go up to all the way 448 gigs of memory. If you want to try this out on your credit card, it's going to go pretty quickly. And we'll look at that, what this VMs costs. But the other thing to note in the last column is the number of temporary disks you get. So if you have a lot of caching, you could look at a G-series. And it's probably not for everybody, but those series will continue to grow and continue to be available. So let's have a look back in the portal again. Here we go. I'll close off these blades. And we'll go back. And here in the bottom, we have a option to create a new item in this subscription. And we want to do a compute. We'll take a Windows Server 2012 R2 image. We need to, of course, give it a name. So we'll say VM SCU 2015. We'll give it a username and, of course, a password. And if we go to pricing tier, this is where we get the pricing tiers. We'll hit view all to give you a better understanding. And then you see things like the A0, the A1, the A2, etc. And if we go down, I'll scroll a bit down, all the way to DS. I'm sorry, I need to pick up another subscription. This is not the right subscription. Here we go. Go back to the pricing tier. View all. Yeah, there we go. You can pick the D series, for instance. So here we see that this particular one, the D1, which has one core, 3.5 gigs, a couple of data disks, will cost me 47 euros per month, roughly 75 Singapore dollars per month. Now, this is on my test subscription. This is not discounted through an enterprise agreement you might have or other ways of purchasing it, but it will give me an understanding that it has a certain price attached to it. So I'll say I want to create a D1. And if we go to all the other items like optional configuration for network, storage accounts, diagnostics, resource groups, etc., we can set certain properties. And of course, we can also do region. Now we'll pick Southeast Asia, which is this region. And we should actually be able to create it. So I'll say create. And you can see here, it is now creating the VM. Depending on the region's speed, on the type we chose, some other factors, it's gonna take a couple of minutes for it to provision. And then here on the left side, you see that I already have a notification popping in, and it's telling me that it's provisioning. In a couple of minutes, it'll show that it's actually done. So we'll use that later on in the demo. What I'll do is I've connected to the A1 just now, and I also connected to D1. And again, the difference is A1 spindles, regular disks, low IOs, D1 flash drive, solid state, fast disks, better IOs. So to show you that, I've installed a tool called Iometer to measure the IOPS, if you will, of the VM. So this is the A1, the slowest one, if you will. And we'll say, we'll take the D drive. We'll do the default specification. You can set certain. And then we'll say, I want to have refresh of 1 second. And we'll say, go. SU 2015. And as you can see at this accelerometer, it's roughly between 250 and 300 IOPS we get from these disks, which is not bad, and certainly standard workloads will probably function fine. But we want to look at the D series and really notice a difference because it should be flash drives. So on the D VM, I'll also start Iometer. There we go. And we'll select the D drive again. We'll say default. I want to refresh my test every second so we get an idea. And we'll say save it, SCU. And you already see the tenfold number of IOs on the same D drive, if you will, with the D series. So on the backend in Azure, really the disks are different, and selecting certain disks will help you in these kinds of numbers. Now, it influences a lot of things because the page file will be on your D drive. You can provision SQL 2014 to use both in memory plus the D drive. So make sure that configuration is set up in a way that you use these drives to really add speed. And you'll notice it by combining as well. The D1 had one data disk. If you do like a D10, you'll have like maybe 10 data disks. You can stripe them and get up to a maximum of 50,000 IOPS in one VM if that is what is necessary for your environment. Again, we'll come back to provisioning the VM in a couple of minutes. For now, we'll skip to the next section. Now, the thing you saw when I was creating the VM is I could just select a Windows Server 2012, hit next, hit some properties, and I'm done. This is what is called a VM image, a VM template, if you will. And these are provisioned through what is now called the VM marketplace. And in this marketplace, Microsoft themselves delivers some of these VM templates to you, but also third parties can do so. So maybe people like Durduck that has a notification solution for System Center will have a standard image in there. Maybe your other supplier, a Barracuda spam filter or something else, could be an image in this marketplace. There's already more than 100 vendors delivering these images, and you can just pick them, you can just provision them, and it will give you a default installation configuration of this application for you. Now, the neat thing is, because the new portal supports resource groups, Again, that's a bundle of things, maybe a website combined with a database with something else, a bundle of things to deliver an application to you. We can also have these resource group templates. Maybe I want to provision a SharePoint farm. Maybe it takes 5 servers for us to get there, a domain controller, a SQL server, a Windows server, IIS server, I don't know. But these things can be resource groups, and also these can be templates as part of the marketplace. And depending on what I select in the marketplace, it might be free. So it might be something you just get and bring in your own license. Or the price you pay for running the VM might include also the rights for using the application. So if I select a SQL image template in the marketplace, it's going to be slightly more expensive. Why? The SQL licensing is in the price we pay for running the VM. So we really need to read what we're selecting, why we're selecting it, and what impact it makes on our licensing. If I want to bring my own SQL license, for instance, I need to provision a standard Windows Server image, install my own SQL Server. So these are small nuances with potentially big impact if you don't watch out. So let's have a look at the marketplace. We'll go back. We'll say new. We'll say compute. And then what you see here is, if I scroll, we get a couple of options: Windows Server, Ubuntu, SQL. Again, selecting the SQL will be more pricier, but we'll have the licensing rights. But there's also the well, they keep rebranding it every other week. Apparently, it's now called Azure Marketplace, but the marketplace for holding all these VMs. Now, I can just search for stuff. Let's say I wanted to install DirDoc in my company for notifying my operators through System Center. I don't need to install it on-prem. I can just take an image, for instance, this one. And here you see, this is a DirDoc Enterprise Alert image, Data Center Edition, 15 users. It gives me some information and even a link to what we get if we create this VM. And when creating the VM, we actually get prompted for the information: how should the VM be called, who should be added, etc. If I go back and discard this one, I can do other things like Barracuda, which has a proper message archiver, for instance, for Office 365, which you might want to use from the cloud. But I can also, if I hit SharePoint, there we go. Here we see farm, SharePoint server farm. And if I click farm, it gives me again some links to documentation of what I get. But if I scroll down, this is where I get other configuration options. I can just specify all the information I need for my farm, and it will go about provisioning all these servers as part of a total process. So this marketplace is pretty neat. You can make use of it. If you're a provider yourself or a vendor, you could also submit your images for reviewing, for adding to the marketplace. Well, the VM is still creating, so we'll carry forward. Now, the other thing that's being used for infrastructure as a service a lot is, of course, the storage component. Microsoft delivers Azure Storage. And again, we have the difference now between regular spindles and flash-based storage, which is quicker. So there's now an option called premium storage. If I create a storage container in Azure, I can select to choose premium storage, and I get the flash-based drives as part of the premium storage. It's consistent, low latency. We can select it for as part of the VMs we're provisioning, up to 32 disks backed by premium storage. Again, up to 50,000 IOPS and local cache, so we get less than a millisecond read speed is what the SLA will guarantee you. Now, that's fine. We can use it as raw storage for your store sample solution, for your VMs, whatever. But you could also have the need for just a file share, right? If you're running a lot of VMs in Azure, you might want to do communication between the VMs. You might need an intermediate file share for things to store or to move around. Up until now, you needed maybe a VM to host that file share. Well, today, natively in Azure Storage, we can now create a file share on top of Azure Storage and use that from anything in Azure, but also outside of Azure, and I'll show you. Azure Files is using the SMB protocol, so everything we know using the File Explorer. It's still SMB 2.1, 3.0 will be coming soon. You can use it, again, through the VMs in the network you're running in Azure or through externally through REST. The same availability replication options you choose when creating storage applies to this file share, of course. We can do up to 5 terabytes per share and 1 terabyte per file. Well, then we would run out with 5 files already. 1,000 IOPS per share, and the throughput would be up to 60 megabytes per second. So let's have a look at Azure Files. Here we go. I'll go back to the portal again. I'll hit browse. And I'll go to storage accounts. And we see a couple of storage accounts that are online. We have the virtual machine storage and virtual storage, and this is the one I just created in the demo. But this is the one we're gonna use, the virtual storage. That's actually one I created, which is empty, doesn't contain anything. I just created this for these demo purposes. And you now see a new option called file shares. So from the new portal, I can create file shares, but just for automation purposes and learning purposes, I'll do it from PowerShell. So who's been using PowerShell? Okay, good number of hands, perfect. I've, of course, loaded the Azure commandlet so I can connect to Azure. I've saved my credentials so I can connect to Azure. So I'll connect to Azure using the publish settings file. And next I'll say get Azure subscription. And it now says, okay, this is your subscription. You're connected, and I have 2, as you can see. And this is the one it will be using because this is the default is true. Now there's a commandlet that's called new Azure storage context, which you can run by saying, I need this storage container. And this is the key I got when creating the container. So this is the shared secret, if you will, for this container. So now I've connected to the container. And I'm gonna see if there's already file shares available, which should turn up blank, right? Because there wasn't any. Well, let's have a look. There isn't any. So what I'm gonna do now is say, I wanna create a new storage share called Azure File Share in that container. I'll hit run. It's created. And we now have a file share, and we can create and do with directories as we do normally. So we can create a directory called test. We can do a directory listing. So we'll say create a directory called test. That's now available. You see that here. So we now have a directory test on this file share, on this file container. And if we, then we want to upload a file. So I've created a test file. It contains Hello People of SCU. That's one we're gonna use. And we'll say, upload this file to this file path. Here we go. It's just gonna take 1 second. There we go. And then if we go back, if we now do a directory listing, we get one file, testfile.txt. So that's a good one. What I'll do is I'll go back into the D1, here we are, the VM, and to show you it's not smoke and mirrors, of course this is just the VM running Windows, I have my file explorer, I can map my network drives. So if I go to map drive, we can just like we did in the old day, do a net use connector drive, in this case to the Z, with the name and password, the same we got when creating. So I'll copy this. To show you it doesn't have a Z drive already, you don't. It's the C and D we have. So we'll say command prompt, please run this command. And we now have the file share connected. We have the test drive, we have the test file, and if we open it, it's Hello People of SCU. So through PowerShell, I've created file share, file directory uploaded, and it's the one we can use. If I go to the A1, same deal. I'm sorry, I'll close some of these windows. Go to the A1. Again, we'll map the drive to show you there's not another VM in play. We can use it for multiple VMs. You can say map the drive again, take the commandlet, and say, and this way you already see the difference in speed, right? The A is a bit slower than the D series because it's regular spindles and it's a shared core. But I'll go back to this PC. It has its Z drive. Test file. Test file. I'll edit the file. Are you fine? And if I go back to the D drive, here we go. Test. It's just a file share running on top of Azure, on top of the storage. So it's a scenario that probably for infrastructure as a service is something to consider if you need it. Now, the other thing that is new to infrastructure as a service is VM extensions, because you're running a VM, and what's next? Well, things like management agents. I want to install a system center agent, or I need to update for it to contain anti-malware or other items. Microsoft now allows you to install the Azure VM agent by default. It's checkmarked by default, so you do get it by default. You need to uncheck it if you don't want it. It allows for the Azure platform to maintain your VM, if you will. With this Azure agent, we can now select VM extensions and allow these to be installed into the VM without anything we need to do. Now, these extensions are curated. So Microsoft will look at them, it will try them, it will maintain them, and it will then certify them for you to pick and choose them from the Azure portal. There's a lot of Microsoft options, but also third parties like Chef, Puppet, and all these other automation tools. Anti-malware, Symantec, McAfee, but also Microsoft Essentials. And that's the good thing, because on top of your Windows Service VMs running in Azure, you get free Microsoft anti-malware, and it's maintained by Microsoft. It can be applied to all the Azure compute roles. It can be configured from the Azure portal, and it allows for integrated monitoring. Some of these system center agents will also be coming in the next couple of weeks to the VM extensions in Azure. So again, let's have a look. We'll go back into the portal. We'll close the blades. And there we see the SCU 2015 is already provisioned. Great. What I'll do is I'll go to the D1. This is the one. And we'll go to Add Remove Programs. And you'll see in a second why. Because currently the only thing that's installed in this VM is the Microsoft Monitoring Agent, right? It's the only thing installed. Nothing else, no antiviral stuff. This is the one. If I go to the D1 in the new portal and I say All Settings, there's an option called Extensions. If I hit Extensions, we do see there's one extension, background info, that's applied. So when I log in, I get this piece of info. If I hit plus, I hit add. These are the curated extensions I can pick and choose from. This is what Microsoft provides you as part of their platform. So Chef, McAfee, Octopus, PowerShell, Puppet, etc., etc. I want to install the Microsoft anti-malware because it's free and it's great. I'll hit create, and then you can do things like exclude files, maybe the scheduled time, other stuff. We'll just leave it default for now. Hit create, and again, I don't need to do anything. It will take the latest version. It will talk through the VM agent to install it to this Azure VM, and probably in the next 60 to 120 seconds, we'll see it popping up in Add Remove Programs, and then we'll also see it as part of the icon in our sys tray, and we know the item is installed. So we'll not wait for that, but at least you know it's coming, and we'll come back to that in a couple of seconds. One of the last things I want to show you is a new service that's not necessarily per se a infrastructure as a service thing running in Azure. but it's certainly an Azure service that you use as part of maintaining your infrastructure, or could use. It's called Azure Operational Insights. It used to be called System Center Advisor, for those people that know and have tried that version. Azure Operational Insights is a cloud-based service that allows you to, well, monitor, maintain your VMs running in Azure, but also your VMs running on premises. It's based on big data, so the Hadoop service is running in Azure. It can hold a lot of data, and you can query and search against it for root cause analysis and monitoring purposes. And it's formed around a concept called intelligence packs, much like with Operations Manager in System Center, which uses management packs. We have intelligence packs that will add logic to Azure Operational Services. Again, you can connect directly. There's also a connection available to Operations Manager so that you can use the data you already have, but maybe do some business intelligence, some reporting, or some searching against your Operations Manager data. There's a Windows Phone app. There's also an iPhone and Android app coming soon. And you can create and customize your own dashboards as part of Azure Operational Insights. So let's have a look at Operational Insights. It's a different URL called opinsights.azure.com. Here we go. It should load, and you can have some understanding of what the service does, how it works, the privacy statement, etc. I'll just sign in because I've already set up my account ahead of time, of course. Give him my password. Now it's loading. There we go. Overview. Well, the first thing I want to show on the left is servers and usage. If I click on servers and usage, we see there are two servers connected. The latest data is coming in the last hour already. So everything healthy and fine because my basic A1 and my standard D1 should be coming in. So that's the good news. They're connected, and they're connected directly. So I don't go through Operations Manager. We have the option to add intelligence packs. There's a gallery, like you can see here, where I can add things like, well, an AD assessment intelligence pack, a configuration assessment intelligence pack, a capacity planning, etc. It will take data it has in this store, apply the intelligence pack, and based on the intelligence pack, I can do certain things with it. For instance, the SQL one, you can get some understanding of what it does and what other screens we get. Now, what I'll do is I've already set up the system update assessment, and this is like the missing patches, what patches should you apply to your service. If I click on this one, this is where you get an overview of the half of my service, so one, because I only have two, are missing security updates. It will be the D1, and that's correct because I deliberately didn't patch it. And then if we click on that, it will give me an update of all the patches I should apply, and from here I can even start applying those. We can do other things. For instance, if we go back to the D1, I'll refresh to see if that already... Nice, there we go. This is just a quick check to show you that the anti-malware is now installed on the D1, so that's finished, that's the good news. We'll go into the event viewer, because what I did is I rebooted this server somewhere this morning, and those are the things you can also track, for instance, through Azure Operational Insights. So again, just to show you it's not smoke and mirrors, I'll go into the system, log, I'll filter it, and we need to have event source user 32. I've looked this up before ahead of time, of course. Where is user 32? Here we go. And the event ID we need is 1074. And here you see that restart of the computer of D1 on behalf of, well, this is my user ID, SCU. So this morning at, what was the timestamp? 12:43 a.m. That's probably Dutch time, though. That's not Singaporese time. I've rebooted the server, so that happened. If I go back to Azure Operational Insights, I can go to Log Management, which is one of the intelligence packs. Here we go. And now I can say I want to monitor the system event log plus, and the thing I want to monitor is the informationals, because if I go back to here, you see this is an informational event, also informational, save, and here we go. And now we can use the Data Explorer, a search tool if you will, to say, well, I want to search, and this is the query for an event called user32, 1074, to see what computers have rebooted today or the last couple of days. There we go. I'll hit enter. And that's, of course, always the problem with live demos. Zero computers have rebooted. That's not correct. It should actually have shown one. Not sure why, but this would be a way, I'm sorry for not working, to show you that computers have been rebooted. Of course, querying for it would be quite cumbersome. So the other thing you could do is go to My Dashboard. I can customize and create a dashboard. I can say Customize, and I'll first remove this tile. And what I'll say Add, and then these, it's a bit small on my resolution, but these are some of the items that Azure Operational Insights already delivers, so you don't need to figure out all these queries. And I can say, for instance, reboot. Yeah, restart probably. Yeah, there we go. This is what we just did in a custom query. So I can say, when did the computers restart? I'll say plus. And then you see there's just one tile, and it should have shown one with a certain time mark. I'm sorry for it not to show, but we can have and say, well, today, how many servers has rebooted? So this is a way of creating these dashboards. And again, I'm sorry for it not showing. It also has a Windows Phone app, is what we said. And I have a Windows Phone here in my hands. And if we go into the Microsoft Store and we search for Operational Insights, there we go. If the Wi-Fi is still here, yep, perfect. This is the app you can install. You see some of the screenshots. I have it already installed on this Windows Phone. The first time you log in, you need to sign in. It's a cached, and here is the same My Dashboard I just created. And so I can have my own dashboard. Again, this is also what I had in the web browser. So from here, I can access the same information I do maybe underway when somebody calls me and I need to follow up on a certain problem. So the Windows Phone app is certainly something to consider, which is pretty cool. I only have 3 minutes left, so I'll start ending my session. There's a ton of things that are new in Azure. There's things like ExpressRoute. There's now availability of firewalling between virtual networks in Azure. There's probably tens of things I didn't tell you about. If you want to know more, certainly you look at the Microsoft Virtual Academy, which has all these things. Follow the Azure blog and have a try yourself. You get a credit of $150 when you sign up to try. Maybe to try out some of these VMs, try out some of these storage options. If you have questions or remarks or something you want to relay about my session, send me a post on Twitter, or I'll be in the hall to answer any questions. So, again, thank you so much, and have a good rest of the System Center universe. Thank you.